From WTJU, my name is Chase Browning, and today I'm sitting with Eve Waters. Eve, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Cool. Glad to hear it. What first brought you to UVA, and then what brought you to WTJU?
Well, TJU brought me to UVA, and I was a single mom, high school dropout, hadn't been in school for years, and biding my time to get busy with my music career, which I couldn't really do because of the child, taking some classes at Piedmont, and a guy there was a TJU DJ and opened my eyes to how simple it was to get involved. And I'd come from Britain, and radio was such a big deal and had been my education, and I really loved the medium, so yeah. I jumped in.
Good. Best way to do it.
Yeah.
When you were first getting started, did you have a partner?
I did for a couple of months, and I wanted to do British Isles music, but that was already taken. So I ended up doing world music, which was not a thing then.
Right.
And not a thing here, but I made it a thing. But my partner, Carolyn, wasn't able to continue past the initial time, so I took over. So in those days, 3-hour slots, it was my weekly 3-hour spot to fill, is what I'm saying. So different now. Didn't have to share it. And yeah, it was fun. And I had to use my own collection, of course. There wasn't much in the studio. Yeah. But then I started figuring out that the record companies would give me records. So it kind of grew. And they put me as part of the rock division. And most of the rockers thought this was ridiculously inappropriate. But there came a time when it started to appear cool, so
yeah,
it was good.
So why world music?
Again, because I couldn't get to do the British Isles music, but also I did grow up with a lot of exposure to other things, and I like it. And the more I got into it, the more I liked it. What world music wasn't even a thing then. I mean, as far as products, and there wasn't marketing on, you know, Afro pop and didn't exist. I sort of leant towards the field recording side. I find that interesting. I realize that wasn't everybody's cup of tea, but so it was kind of fun. And I started having fans. So it was good. And then I kind of lobbied to expand with the support of others at the station to expand. Like, couldn't we have other folky shows? Folk meaning traditional, not meaning you didn't plug in your guitar and you wrote the song yourself. So that kind of blossomed. And so there was a few years there, and we became a division of our own. So there was a few years there where I got to create something, and we had this little team, and it was fun.
Yeah, I've actually heard in the lore of the station that you were, if not the first, and one of the first to bring British folk music to the airwaves.
Yeah.
Especially to TJU.
Yeah, yeah. How cool. It was just one of those things to look back on as a neat phase in my life. And we had such a great team and lovely people and crazy music directors. And see, I was still taking college classes and working and being a mom. And part of me kind of had missed out on that college time, the social thing. And so TJU was my little club, you know? And it was fun hanging around with people who were slightly younger. We had fun. My daughter came to the director's meetings every week and did her homework.
What was the social scene like for TJU at the time? You said in 1980?
Yeah, 80 to 88 maybe, yeah, I was doing it. Well, I can't really say. I can't give you some juicy details because I just kept to my own track, which was my road to legitimacy and a small reign of coolness for a short time. So I don't know. Maybe that was characteristic of that period, though. When you think about how music has gone with such distinct genres and so many proliferation of so many genres, and that wasn't really there yet. So maybe it was just a good time when people were kind of feeling the music they preferred, but it wasn't... You didn't have to sign up and carry a card.
Who were some of the first artists that you noticed in the library that, like, wow, okay, now finally starting to represent world music?
Hard to give you a really useful answer, but TJ, you did possess a collection, almost the entire collection of quite a few volumes that were made in 76, the Bicentennial, and they were aimed at people like me who like to hear documentary recordings and vintage stuff just as it is. You know, I'm still not very fond of it's old, and so we have to do stuff to it so you can like it now. I like it then. and the juxtaposition of different cultures, and I find that really interesting. I work as a collage artist now in art. That was sonic collage. So I don't remember what that, I guess it was a Smithsonian series, but there was many volumes. So there was like Puerto Rican American music and old things from the 30s and all these different ethnicities it was really great. I learned a lot from that.
What do you think is the difference between field recordings and documentary recordings versus things you would find in a studio?
Well, I can't say technically because I'm so backward technically, but I'm as a performer that I'm still into that. Like what if there were no fireworks? And you didn't need three trucks to bring my show. And it was just me digging into my heart and just singing stuff that I've loved for a long time. And that's what I like about documentary recordings. It's just ordinary people who are not into showing off or trying to make anything happen to you, the listener. It just is. And that goes back to the beginning of humans. That's what we're all like inside, I think. I like being taken back to that origin place. And it was so cool that TJ, you had room for that. I just snuck in there.
Snuck in and there was still room, of course. How has your experience at TJU gone on to maybe help or maybe widen your experience as a professional musician?
Well, it really has, because it exposed me to a lot of music, and that was good for my ears and my head. It built me a lot of fans. And I hated to have to leave, but I just did to make a living. It was painful for years to not have my radio time, my radio friends. But even now, still once in a while, people say, "Oh, are you still doing your show on TJU?" It was years ago, but it taught me a lot about sequencing that I find really useful in programming, and also, get this. I go back to the days, I'm an improvisation kind of person, and I go back to the days like I never planned the shows. Maybe I had one or two things I really wanted to play, so I'm queuing it up and listening, oh yeah, that'll go good after this. So I did it all improvisationally, and that's hugely, it's just a buzz.
Yeah.
And I think the results were pretty good, because I was trying to go for that joy thing in the listener, but it really helped me forevermore, planning programs, reading what's going to go now, what's going to be good now for this occasion.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's making of me. And I learned a lot of cool music. And I started promoting concerts and things, which was kind of a new idea then. And so I met a lot of cool performers. I went for the people I really personally wanted to meet. And I got to meet them. So
it's nice when it works out like that.
Yeah, yeah. A long time ago.
So it seems like you definitely value the live improvisation part of performance.
Yes, and of radio.
And of radio, yes. Yeah. Is live music the main way that you sort of experience music, or do you listen to a lot of CDs or records, or do you mainly try and stick with the live?
Well, I haven't been listening as much lately because I just got out of the habit, but when I remember to, especially going back to archival field recordings, my head explodes all over again. It's just amazing to me that there are still real people out in the world that just sing old stuff because they want to. And also the whole idea, like we are so not used, like everybody plays guitar.
Yeah.
Almost everybody's in a band, but hardly anybody that you encounter around here is used to the idea of, yeah, just sitting around the living room with mom and dad and grandma and plunking and we're just singing because we want to sing. We're not really trying to be fabulous.
Yeah.
That's that's the sweet spot I'm aiming for. And I like to do it because I'm not capable of being fabulous, really, in any other way. But also because I want to stand up and remind people it would be okay. Touch their sweet spot and wake it up so we could all be a little more sensible.
Yep. It'd be nice right about now.
I'm not going to say anything else, but everything goes in cycles.
Speaking of the cycles, how do you think that how most people access music now has changed since your time at TJU?
Obviously it has. And I don't participate at all in the download free music thing. I know it because my day job is playing for weddings and such things. And I can see the change in just the last 2 years of what brides ask for. And they make their musical requests like they're, you know, they're programming their device and let's download this, and they're, which is fine, and I try to accommodate them, and I couldn't possibly keep up with the latest songs if they didn't clue me to what people are liking. But I also feel like, but that's just in your head. That's just this idea of, oh, well, I walk down the aisle to this because I used to cry when, but when you walk down the aisle, it should be like a pace that you want to walk down to. What? Wow. It's not making a statement to me. So I think that's a huge way it's changed. And I'm not saying it's good or bad, but to me, it's very weird. And I guess that's going to leave room for me to show up every once in a while and just sing and remind people like tears are rolling down your face because it's just pure and simple.
I haven't really thought about it that way. I like that.
Cool. I'm glad I was able to convey it all, because I think the different ways we purchase the music, experience the music, does change our head.
Absolutely.
Even the festival and concert thing, I don't even go to live music mostly, because the few times I have, it's either so spectacular, it's not real, or it's so, I've been doing this, and you're paying me, and...
And that's about that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep.
What do you think, regardless of the medium and regardless of how people access music, what do you think people can learn from listening to music?
I'm also trained as a therapeutic musician. I've had extensive training and experience playing for people in the mode not merely to entertain them, but using scientific principles of what affects our nervous system, what affects our immune system. Did you realize that? Do you ever think of that?
No, I never did either.
We think about music, oh, this will calm you down, dear, or this will remind you of your boyfriend. And that's all true, too. But even the actual sounds, the frequencies are affecting us. The sound is affecting, you know, we're nearly all water, and water vibrates. And every sound is creating vibrations in us. There's much more we have to learn, but most of that's incontrovertible. So with just a few carefully focused techniques, you can, in a few minutes, you can start that cascade of beneficial chemical reactions, stimulate the immune system. What a deal. Why do you need to fill your head with all these word, and noisy, and only one rhythm, when all these other things can instantly, or nearly instantly, lower the blood pressure and slow the heart rate and raise the oxygen levels. So there's that.
I know that, like, when I listen to a song and I get chills, I mean, that's one response, but I had no idea it was much richer than that.
It is. Yeah. And a famous physicist whose lecture I attended claims that when you can create that chills reaction in a listener, you're helping their body initiate the production of chemicals more powerful than anything we can make in a lab.
Wow.
Beneficial ones, the endorphins, the stuff that fights away germs. Just imagine.
It's very powerful.
Yeah.
It just speaks even more to this, the power of music.
Right. And then there's all the other levels, the words that address what we can't put into words, what we're feeling, the communal aspect. I'd like it to be the communal aspect of singing together without egos in the way, but it can also be the communal aspect of everybody holding up their lighter and, you know.
Yep. Or now their phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice silly me. Light. I'm so old.
But yeah, same. The spirit is still there. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And how do we make the spirit? Wouldn't that be, if that's the main objective, how do we make the spirit be there and be felt?
What That's part of the matters? Magic.
Yeah.
All part of the magic.
And see, radio, I think, is special that way. And TJU, especially for its aliveness, because we have to make the pictures in our mind. So it's more powerful effect of just letting the sound in and letting the imagination be stimulated. And we may be working, we may be walking, driving, whatever, but the sound is getting in there.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It is. Do you have any particularly fond memories of TJU that you would like to share?
It was really nice to have that colleague relationship with so many people and the kind of expanded consciousness zone that people get into after they do their show. And yeah, it was great. And also the other music directors in those short few years when I was really being active, and it was a nice little bunch we had. That expertise in different areas of music, very vastly different, but there was a good moment of common objectives and thinking of the good of the station and the listening public.
Oh yeah, fighting the good fight.
Yeah, and look where it is. Look where it's gone today.
Yep, 60 years later.
Yeah,
here we are.
That's so nice.
Is there anything else that I haven't mentioned that you would like to, or that you would like to highlight about the station?
You can't fail to be grateful to everybody who just keeps it going and salute them all, past and present.
Eve Waters, thank you very much for dropping in.
Yeah, it was great.